It can only be Millennial. And now here is your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello and welcome back to Millennial X. And I'm now here with Ryan Roger Athey, who is a YouTuber. This will be a bit different. It's not overtly political. It's really about culture. We're going to be talking about science fiction. A lot of you aren't interested in Doctor Who or Star Trek or whatever. I know that, but some of you are. And I thought it was fine to have one stream concentrating on that kind of thing because it is a big area. And so, Ryan, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
Oh, by all means. Well, hello, everyone. I hope you're all doing well. It's great to see you all watching today. My name is Ryan Roger Athey. I'm the host and founder of a channel called Reality Based, where I give my thoughts on topics and people I'm most interested in. More recently, over the past few years, I've been covering pop culture topics of the day, and I've also been very controversial in my opinions. Most recently, I called a black man's game company Spearchucker Studios, and that led to a cancel culture campaign against me, but I'm still here, and I still speak my mind. So it's great to be here. Whoa, that's my name for you. I know plenty of the fine folks watching think, why is he calling him Whoa? But that's my name for you.
All right, very good. So this, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about how we got in touch. I'll say that because I was watching, I mean, this all happened because there was a new season of Doctor Who coming on earlier this year. I think it was May. Yeah, it was May. And I didn't watch it because I haven't watched it for many years. But I heard about it and I saw clips of it and I was just staggered by how bad it was. So I started, I thought, well, I'm on Substack nowadays. I put out one essay a week. And I thought I could write something about this without going into the nerdy details for people who aren't interested in that. I could write something in the abstract about the politics, the psychology behind this kind of thing. And in the case of Doctor Who, it's all centered on one particular man, Russell T. Davis, a fellow Welshman, Ryan.
And, we call him Rusty Tin Dildo, my good man, nowadays.
There are all sorts of funny names and nicknames for him, and I almost feel sorry for him, except that he has enormous power, so maybe we shouldn't. I mean, it's completely asymmetrical. I do think he's a very damaged man, for what it's worth, but yeah, that's a whole other thing. So I wrote a series of essays about this, and it ended up being much bigger than I thought. I thought it was going to be 3 or 4, but it ended up being 7. And it was talking about the history, not about Doctor Who in the classic era, 63 to 89, but really it did touch on that just to lay the background. But it was really about from the revival from 2005 to 2022, and then this most recent iteration. We'll go into that a bit, but I'm just explaining how Ryan and I got to know each other. Having written that set of essays, I was looking for people who could, well, and I should say simultaneous to that, I was watching a lot of, so I've been off YouTube for a long time, but YouTube was a good resource because it was full of people talking about this new series of Doctor Who as it went out. And there were, one of them was Will of the Fans, one of them was Reality Based. There were quite a few, and those were the two that I liked the most. And also Mr. H Reviews was good as well. They were people, it's like, and this will be the case for a lot of Star Wars, Star Trek, Indiana Jones, I'm sure there are many, where you've been a fan for years, you were a fan of the classic thing, and now in the last 10 or 15 years, you've watched the thing decline and decline and decline. And at some point, you stopped caring. And then it's from that point on, its further decline was almost pleasurable for you because you could see it. It was like a revenge for you.
Oh, yes, especially with the, I call him the gay brown doctor, Dr. Hutu, because he's Rwandan, you know. Hutu, Tutsi, that sort of thing.
But he's not the first, though, is he?
No.
Axel Ruda Cabana was the first Rwandan Doctor Who, as we all know.
And he really blew up. My goodness. But, it's a shame.
It's grim. It's ugly as hell. But that is just a side thing. I mean, the situation is awful with Doctor Who, but with others as well. But I think Doctor Who is probably the worst. It's the one that's been so brutally assaulted by Walkley and just the decline in standards. Because that's a whole other thing. With this latest iteration, it's not just the woke politics. It's also in every way. It's like the characterization, the plotting, the pacing. In every way, it's gone massively downhill. But just to finish that explanation, sure. So I was watching these channels, and then I wanted a way to publicize my essays. So I reached out to Ryan and several others, and we did some live streams about it. So thank you, Ryan, for helping to publicize.
You're thanking me. I remember the first millennial. Now, folks, I'm 25 years old. I know I don't look it. That's what happens when you live in the South Wales valleys. It really does age you. But I remember watching the first millennial when I was 16 years old, back when this guy was leading the forefront of making, well, everything great again, for lack of a better term. And I thought, as someone who grew up during the original Gamergate and through the first phase of the culture war, for lack of a better term, I thought it was very sad to see so many fine folks and fellow creators like Woe, like Jared Taylor, like Red Ice TV, to name but a few of the many talented people who got purged from mainstream social media. I thought I'd never get far as a creator myself, but these fine folks inspired me to speak my mind. I thought back then I'd be too young. No one would take a 16, 17-year-old seriously, even if he did look middle-aged. But when I heard this guy followed me on X and got in contact with me, that made my year, quite simply. And it was great to have you on, Reality Based. And my specialty is now, more than ever, bringing people together. And I think as 2024 comes to an end and 2025 begins, we can mix some of the old political content creation of the past with the pop culture content creation of the present to create a better, brighter future. And I think that's very possible in this day and age, because recently there's been a tussle between creators. I'm sure you're familiar with that. You've been doing this far longer than I have. Between more moderate creators who want to build a bridge with the establishment and reform, for lack of a better word, the existing popular culture. And there are radicals such as myself, although I'd probably be a moderate among the circles you've encountered, who want to just burn down our popular culture and rebuild it anew. So if I can be an open platform for the fine folks who inspired me, then so much the better.
Oh, certainly. I've always said this, that it's better to have connections than to burn bridges. And you never know how something could be, how a connection could be useful in the future. So, absolutely. I agree. I think people should be acquainting themselves with each other as much as possible. I mean, it is social media, after all.
Well, there's nothing. I tell you this, Woe, there's nothing social about social media. Speargate, which is what I like to call my controversy, it was back in late October, is living proof of that. I had so many people trying to cancel me. It took them 3 days to find me, because I'm usually as quiet as a church mouse on social media. But then I just made a statement standing by what I said, and it caused all sorts of insane people, of course, left-wing people, and even some moderates who I thought were on our team to go a bit crazy. But it was great. It was a way of showcasing fine folks and fellow creators in a way that I never thought possible. So much the better.
What was the extent of it? I mean, how bad did it get?
Well, millions of people saw it on X, I'll tell you that. but it was just an offhand comment. I only make such offhand comments when I think it's funny myself. So it was about a game called Tales of Khenzerezhao that was created by an actor, a British actor by the name of Abu Bakar Salim. He was in House of the Dragon, and his company behind it, Surgent Studios, released the game, and barely anyone played it, and the project was a complete failure. And all I said was, as an offhand comment, should have called it Spear Chucker Studios. It would have lasted longer. And then there was all sorts of controversy. First of all, of things other folks said, and then they found the clip of me saying that, and took them 3 days to find me, because my strategy is, I'm not going to confront this. I'm going to treat this situation with the seriousness it deserves. I just ignored it for 3 days. While everyone else on the panel was getting, you know, dog-piled on for days, and then I just made the statement defending what I said, and they came for me. It was perfectly fine. Thin skin don't win, that sort of thing. And within a week, the controversy blew over, and we had a great time on Saturday Night Hypnosis. It's a hypnotic show. It's a great pop culture show. You can find Hypnotic quite easily on, I think it's at Real Hypnotic on X. He's far sharper than I am. And he stuck by me. He stood by me when it would have been so much easier to throw me under the bus. But that's the great advantage of bringing people together and knowing creators, is that those that you know over many months, maybe many years, you know they'll stick by you. And I was very thankful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. The thing is, you never know who's going to throw you under the bus. Mm-hmm. And this is another reason why it's a good idea to have as many connections as possible, mm-hmm. so that you'll mm-hmm. be able to survive these things. Because, you know, otherwise you could end up completely isolated. But yeah, of course, there are people who will stick with you through thick and thin. In this case, it's obviously just a joke. I mean, it's...
Yeah, very bad joke. I remember watching the replay and everyone sighing and going, oh, and it's like, yeah, they knew. Because Grums was on the show as well. He's a very well-known social media personality. He's also one of the lead developers of WoW, World of Warcraft. A lot of people don't like him. So it was any excuse to go after him, to go after the show, and ultimately to go after me. But I think my role in that show and within, you know, pop culture content creation is not me personally. It's not my talent or ability to speak my mind. It's the fact that I encourage more and more people, just ordinary people, to speak their mind, speak truth to power, and become creators themselves. That and the fact that I bring people together. I brought Hypnotic and Smash JT together. Smash recently passed 100,000 subscribers. Hypnotic's at about 75,000, I think. And Smash JT is in the middle of a lawsuit between a crazy lady called Alyssa Mercante. So
her. It's funny how every community has its own dramas and sort of bugbears and so on, nemesis. Yeah. And I hadn't heard about this girl until I started looking into these channels, watching Will of the Fans and so on. Mm-hmm. And they would occasionally mention this Alyssa, and it eventually became clear it's someone kind of unbalanced and obsessive. Mm. Who's going after these people?
It's like if Anita Sarkeesian and Zoe Quinn merged together into a person.
Well, that hardly bears thinking about. The thing is that disavowal mm-hmm. of each other is a real problem, mm-hmm. Because it's the main way that they weaken, that they isolate. Well, it's the Alinsky thing. I mean, isolate mm-hmm. the target. You know, get other people to feel that sticking with him is more trouble than it's worth. And then they disavow. But the overall effect that that has on the community that's doing it is a demoralizing effect. Mm-hmm. Because then everyone knows, well, we're a community that sell each other out, that throw each other under the bus. Everyone knows it because everyone saw it. Everyone saw it playing out. We did it. So we're just a shitty community then. So it's a bad, it's not just bad for the target who's being isolated. It's bad mm-hmm. for the whole community.
Oh, yeah.
But it is something that seems to have worked for the last 10, 15 years. But I suspect it's working less and less now.
Mm.
I think that something has changed, and I don't know how significant it is, but something has definitely changed in the last 2-3 years. I actually think, and I'm not going to give examples, mm-hmm. but there are things said on certain YouTube channels today that really, it's quite astonishing to me. I think if I'd said that 5 years ago when I was on YouTube, there would have been trouble. That someone just says something in a like off the cuff or whatever, and it's okay. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, I literally created a term that causes channel suppression. That's the second great foe of a content creator. This man experienced deplatforming, which is the highest form of channel suppression. I came up with, it's not a word, it's a term, tranny demon. You type that up on X. You say that on, ironically, other people's channels, they get, you know, suppressed. You can tell. Keywords, algorithmic suppression. It's there, folks. But what I found, and this is the great advantage of hindsight, and thanks to trailblazers like Woe, like Jared Taylor, like Red Ice TV, to name but a few, we have learned from that era in that if you cover mainly political or cultural-based content on mainstream social media, you're going to get done in eventually. You're going to get deplatformed. Same is not true of pop culture content creation. And if you mix a bit of them together, well, the algorithm can't tell the difference, especially if you put it in a humorous way. I try to do that. Recently on Saturday Night Hypnosis, there was a game that Naughty Dog previewed at the Game Awards. I think it was Intergalactic Heretic Prophet, and had this bold brown woman as the lead character, and it was set in the 1980s, and somehow there were spaceships. Very weird story. And I thought, is this a universe where Africa didn't exist? And I, of course, laughed, and Hypno was just talking to Will, but you could tell Dragon Slayer was laughing his head off. Smash was like, oh no, I'm in the middle of a lawsuit. Don't cause more controversy. But I was like, I found it funny, so I'll say it. But it just goes to show, you mix the different elements together, you can get away with it, and you can keep on going and keep on growing. Oh, excuse me. See, I use one of my terms, it causes me to cough.
Okay. I think it's an interesting thing and a strategy that you're talking about, because it kind of camouflages one with the other. It does seem to work. I mean, the algorithm, as you say, it's like it doesn't know what to do, because it would obviously be kind of crazy to ban a game review channel or a sci-fi review channel for its. I don't know. I think at one point it was the trajectory was so steep that they were heading towards that kind of thing, like in 2020. Mm. But I think it's sort of calmed down now. So it's a way forward.
Well, let me just say, Woe, that if I called a British politician who was gay brown and a doctor, that gay brown doctor MP back in 2016, 2017, yeah, I'd probably be deplatformed before long. The landscape definitely has changed, which I think is a fantastic opportunity, at the very least, to showcase fine folks such as yourselves and others who have been deplatformed to a new generation of people who have recently been awakened over the past, say, 4 years, post-coronavirus crisis, and expose those fine folks to the perspectives of what I like to call legacy creators, creators who have been there and done it for so long that they can build, their reputation is their legacy, especially if they've been deplatformed. So that's my role. Showcase fine folks and fellow creators, fresh blood, getting into what we are doing, and also showcasing legacy creators such as yourself. And on the plus side, plenty of people seem to watch. So it's a win-win in my book.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, there has been a burgeoning of content creators on YouTube over the last, I guess, I don't know if the first was Nerdrotic, maybe Dave Cullen, around that 2015 kind of time, 2017, I remember Dave talking about this kind of thing. And since then, it's really exploded. It's a huge scene on YouTube, complaining about, a lot of people don't like the term woke, but I tend to use it just as a useful shorthand.
Sure.
I don't know what else you would call it, cultural Marxism, political correctness.
Those are great examples. I think it's three things mixed into one: political correctness, social justice, and identity politics. And if you put all three together, you have what is woke. But I think one of the great things we've seen in pop culture discourse is what I call the first step to victory, which is to highlight the problem. It only goes so far, and that's why some creators get into a circular effect and nothing ever gets done. And then the second step is to find solutions. And then the third step is be the change you want to see. And that doesn't just apply to pop culture or to how to save franchises from a fate worse than death. It can also be applied in the political scene, the cultural scene, as well as the pop cultural scene, as well as in your everyday life. You have a problem, so you highlight it. You find solutions for the problem. And then the most important thing, either yourself or with other people, is to be the change you want to see. And governing your life, I know that sounds like a big concept, but governing your life on that equation can get a lot of things done. So there you go.
Definitely. I'd like to talk, 'cause again, it's not often that I have someone on who's so familiar with this topic. And I think by now the people who are not interested in it will probably have tuned out. So I think we're safe to go into it in some depth.
I can talk about political topics and cultural topics. You know, most moderate pop culture creators, as soon as you bring up political or cultural topics, you can see it in their faces, the fear.
Yeah. We might go into other stuff later, but let's talk for now about this plague that has affected science fiction, because it's specifically science fiction, isn't it? It's a weird thing how it's not, like, it is there in other genres, but sci-fi has been totally fucked, totally shit, over the last 10 years. The Force Awakens, Star Wars was maybe a watershed moment. I don't know when would you say this started? And maybe I'm underestimating, maybe you would say in the 2000s. I don't know, you take it away.
Well, I think the past 10 years we've seen it slowly but surely creep in. It's amazing how much has changed for the better and for the worse since 2014, folks. But it's certainly been present over the past 10 years. Of course, you had the original Gamergate. Then you had projects like Star Wars The Force Awakens, basically a ripoff of the original Star Wars. Then you had Ghostbusters 2016, which was really the first egregious example of what we would consider wokeness in entertainment. And then, like all viruses, I mean, Elon described it very well, woke mind virus. Like all viruses, it infected everything it touches. And I stand by the theory, that this disease, because it is a disease, is capable of infecting everyone without a strong mental fortitude. It's even infecting Polish developers over at CD Projekt Red. Well, if it can infect a Polish developer who made great games in a land that's supposed to be right-wing from a political and cultural perspective, then it can infect anyone and everyone, which is very, very strange. But I think The root start of this journey that we've all been on does go back at least 10 years, because everything seems to be dominoing, like everything from the past leading to the future. And I think 2025 will be a great year to showcase whether we're on the path to victory or whether it's just another false dawn like 2017 was. You were there, my good man. I'm sure you, from a historical perspective, 2017 and especially 2018, you from my perspective at least, you could see that it was turning more into a false dawn. Hopefully that doesn't repeat.
But, oh, yeah, in 2018, that was when the censorship started and really ramped up. I mean, it started in 2017, but 18 was that was when it was random purges every few months on YouTube, where a random bunch of people would just, their channels were just gone the next day. It was awful. But I want to concentrate specifically on science fiction. So sure. Ghostbusters 2016, The Force Awakens, you get from that to Amazon, the Lord of the Rings of the, was it the Ring of Power, the Rings of Power,
Rings of Power, but I call it Rings of Piss.
Well, it was just absolutely fucking awful. I watched the first episode or two, and it was just lifeless. I mean, this is the thing, it's not just like, oh, there's a black woman where there should be a white guy and everyone knows it, or there's a transgender thing crowbarred in. The weird effect in the end is a sort of joylessness. Like, you get the sense that it's just the writers, and this maybe is there has been this decline in every way, like, except for the technical aspects of you know, the craft. That's fine. I don't think I don't think there's been decline there, but in all of the areas of writing, it's just dreadful now. And so I don't really know why there's this connection between the wokery, the political correctness, and the lack of vigor, the lack of joy. But it's very much there. I mean, I remember, as I say, watching this Rings of Power and just thinking, what am I doing here? What's anyone doing? What's anyone supposed to take from this? It's so uninvolving.
Oh, absolutely. I think it all stems from the infection of institutions, especially the institution of entertainment, when it became more important to spread an agenda than to entertain people. Because let's face it, folks, over the past 50, 60 years, so much has changed very, very quickly. And a great way to showcase that change was through popular culture. I mean, the swinging 60s and of course, the yuppie years of the 1980s, that was back when popular culture entertained you first and then spread a subtle agenda second, and that was sustainable. But that seemed to come to an end at sometime in the 2010s. That's when it became overtly different. And I think that's because the institution of entertainment, likewise with education, media, and other institutions of power, got corrupted by a nefarious force, or forces, because not everything's two-dimensional, and it became agenda first, entertainment a very distant second. And that's why people are starting to notice everywhere, in everything, whether it's your favorite science fiction show or damn commercial. It's a poison, and it needs to be recognized.
This is a point that I made about Doctor Who, that in the 2000s, when it came back in 2005, that first era, 2005 to 2010, the entertainment was still primary. That was obviously still the point. And it was very, as much as it wasn't my kind of thing, I didn't, you know, it wasn't for me. I was too old and too grizzled, and I was too accustomed to the 70s and 80s type of production. But nonetheless, I could see that objectively it was well written, it was well done, it was well made even. And so they were primarily concerned with it being an entertaining product. And then throughout the 2010s, that, and again, it's funny how that it's so, it's always this trajectory. It's throughout the 2010s, starting from about 2013, 14, straight through to the 2020. Throughout that, it gradually lost its joy, its vigor, and became tedious, became more politically correct, became more preachy, and just in every way less enjoyable. And it's amazing how much it's like there was a program to do this deliberately. Mm. It seems almost conscious. I don't think it was.
Well, in the BBC, it was. I mean, that's why Doctor Who took practically a year off in 2016 and only had that special, The Return of Dr. Mysterio, because in 2017, the BBC put forward a diversity and an inclusion program, which compromised a lot of their entertainment, including Doctor Who. And Stephen Moffat tried his best to square that circle with a soft reboot with Peter Capaldi and that brown lesbian woman. But that wasn't enough for the BBC, so they put on Chris Chinballs and Dr. Karen, and let's have a woman doctor.
Yeah, this is the era that came after Stephen Moffat, mm-hmm. when Chris Chibnall was in charge of it, and it was a female doctor, which was, I think, just dreadful. It didn't work. Terrible decision. I think the thing is, it really didn't work. I mean, it killed the show commercially. Mm-hmm. And I think even left-wing papers, even like liberal papers, mm-hmm. had to admit by 2021, they had to admit that this is in shit. It's in deep shit now. Mm-hmm. This show that had been massively successful is now on death's door. And I just found out a few days ago, mm-hmm. I didn't know this when I was writing the essays, but I just found out there was an interview with Chris Chibnall where he confirmed that the BBC were not only on the verge of axing Doctor Who, mm-hmm. but basically had done so. And there was sort of like a period of about a week where it wasn't going to continue. It was mm-hmm. this was going to be it. And somehow during that week, he managed to wrangle things and persuade them to make another season of it. And then the whole thing started with Russell T. Davis, where they got him on board and the streaming deal with Disney. So that gave it a new lease of life. But again, this brings us to this current era. After all of this degradation with Stephen Moffat, Capaldi, the woman, Chris Chibnall, now you've got Russell T. Davis, who was the guy who brought it back in the first place in 2005. And I think they thought, well, he'll know how to rescue it. He'll know how to breathe new life into it, bring it back from the brink. And what he's done is astonishing. And why don't you describe what he's done?
Well, the guy must have syphilis, because you can't go from doing such great work 20 years ago to where you are today. His brain must be melting. But in all seriousness, how Doctor Who became Disney Who, that's what I call this era, an unholy alliance between the BBC, Disney, and Sony through Bad Wolf, which is Rusty Tin Dildo's group, his media group that he sold to Sony. And the fact that came together to practically save Doctor Who was insane. Two seasons were scheduled. One has already run its course. Nobody really liked it. And a second one is...
The ratings were absolutely abysmal. The worst in the show's 60-year history.
Yes. And a second season is due for release sometime in 2025. Of course, there's a Christmas special coming up. The one good thing RTD has changed is no longer New Year's specials. They're Christmas specials again. Yay!
Yeah.
Bad news is everything else is bad. Go ahead.
That was something Chris Chibnall did. He changed it to New Year's specials. And it always seemed a strange decision. But I don't know why he did that. It's just another stupid decision that he made. But anyway, let's not hammer that home. But explain to the audience how Russell T. Davis has really upped the ante with this new iteration, with the first season and what we're about to see next year.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's start off with the specials. in which David Tennant returned and looked older and more frail or more raggedy as an attempt to, you know, kickstart Doctor Who back to life with a series of specials that some people did enjoy. I personally did not, especially towards the end when...
And I should say this was to celebrate the show's 60th anniversary. Yes. That was the purpose of those specials. And yet it wasn't, the anniversary wasn't addressed or mentioned at all in them, which is a strange moment, really.
Especially when in the 50th anniversary, it was one hell of a great spectacle. The 60th anniversary was quite shallow in comparison. But right at the end, the Doctor, he doesn't regenerate, folks. He bi-generates from head to toe, in which the two beings are there. You know, their cocks emerge. So they literally... Nkuti Gatwa, or that's what I call him, came out of David Tennant from that region. They bi-generated, so there are two Doctors, and they ultimately did in the Toymaker antagonist. And then the old white Doctor retires in his TARDIS, and the new gay brown Doctor goes off on his adventures. And that led to the first season full of awful episodes. One of the episodes, Rogue, was so bad.
I'll just put up this. I've been looking for a photo of the bi-generation, which was unique in the show's history. It's a new bit of lore.
Literally came out of his cock.
Yeah. And you've got this, and suddenly you've got this gay black, supposedly Scottish doctor. I mean, it's just so awful. I don't know where to be. You go with the season one, which broadcast this year.
Yes, it was absolutely awful. The worst episode, in my opinion, was an episode called Rogue. It was a historical episode based in the, I think, early 19th century UK. So British Empire, that sort of thing. Throughout the entire episode, the gay brown doctor is basically hunting for penis, for lack of a better term, from this humanoid-looking, he's a human, but he's not a human being, white guy who's a bounty hunter trying to go after some bird people who are the bad guys of the episode.
It's fucking nonsense. But I think the key thing here is... Mm. It's set at the height of empire and so on. Well, not the height, but definitely the early 19th century.
Yes.
Hierarchy is demonized. Marriage is demonized. None of the characters are interested in marriage or childbirth. They're all just chasing each other. There's this gay interracial thing at the heart of it. I mean, it's so... I mean, it was written by a couple of lesbians, and it really shows.
Well, absolutely. It was so bad that on review, because we covered it, every episode of it on Will of the Fans' is Who TF Live. I think the Rogue episode was the most viewed of the live streams. But it was so bad for me that throughout the show, I was feeling physically ill towards the end of it. That's never happened before or since when covering a show or any piece of popular culture. It was so bad, it made me sick to my stomach, because this is how far Doctor Who, or Disney Who in this case, had fallen, and it's just more living proof that there are fates worse than death.
I mean, to see the Doctor gyrating to that disco music, you know, this is just such a world away from Tom Baker, William Hartnell, Sylvester McCoy. It's unimaginable that any of those iterations would have behaved like this. And especially, as you say, chasing Cock while his assistant is in mortal danger. This kind of thing, it's like they haven't thought this through at all. It's full of all sorts of contradictions. It's completely out of keeping with the character. It's offensively modern PC, and it's just shit storytelling as well, because it actually makes you not care about the main character. He comes across as a dick, complete dick. But I don't even think that's the worst episode. I mean, I would say Space Babies. I should say that I haven't actually watched any of these. I've only watched the finale dubbed mm-hmm. two-part. But I've watched clips from each of the other episodes. And I think I did accidentally end up watching Space Babies from start to finish, but I can't remember if I have. I don't know. But of all of them, I would say that either Space Babies was the worst because it was just so stupid and shallow and childish crap. Mm-hmm. Or the one immediately following that, with the transgender villain, the music thing.
Oh, Devil's Court. Oh, what an awful episode that was.
I mean, that is absolutely excruciatingly bad. Mm. The villain couldn't act. There was the preachy stuff about pronouns. The premise was for a fantasy show, not a sci-fi show. Didn't work. All this, it just crap, absolute crap. Mm-hmm. And then to crown this steaming pile of crap, you've got a fucking song and dance number at the end. I mean, like nothing like this had ever happened in the show's 60-year history. But this gay guy who's in charge of it presumably just thinks, I'm gay, I like show tunes, so we'll have a song and dance number, like a High School Musical kind of thing at the very end. Why not? It's my show. And so that's that. And of course, it's canon. You know, it's all happened. And then another one. It was, then of course, there's Dot and Bubble, which is, again, just preachy, anti-white, like quite explicitly anti-white preaching there. And then you've got the one that was the, was it 37 yards?
No, it was 73 yards, ironically.
73 yards. And I wouldn't have minded that if it were in a ghost story series. But for science fiction, it was good. So
it was clearly two shows smacked together. I liked the second half of it because I saw myself in the villain.
Yeah, I can imagine. And then I'm trying to think. Then I think it was Rogue. And then you had the two-part. I think I'm missing one of them. I'm forgetting about some. Oh, the Boom.
Yes. Boom.
Now, I didn't watch it, but I thought, from what I saw, from what I did see of it, I thought this is actually a good episode. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate that it's made in this era. But and then the two-parter at the end, absolutely appalling storytelling. Mm. Unbelievably bad. Again, I won't go into the details, but
The greatest
in bad writing.
Yeah, the greatest threat to Sutek, God of Death, was an underage single mother. So I think we all know what the greatest threat to our existence is, folks.
Yeah, and all of that, the contradictions, the stupid plot contrivances, the unexplored, the setups with no payoff, the payoffs with no setup. I mean, if you wanted to teach people how not to write, what's a bad piece of drama? What's bad writing, bad plot mechanics, like all the rest? Here it is. This is it. And you know, Russell T. Davis then was doing a script writing course. The BBC were actually having him after all of this, teaching young people how to write. And I thought, my God, the irony there is off the scale. The guy should be put out to pasture like 1,000 fucking times over for it, because he has so lost his talent, or it's either that he's just lost his talent or he has completely lost the humility that keeps talent in check. Mm-hmm. So he thinks that everything that drips out of his fingertips is just brilliant, and there's no need to check it. There's no need to think. There's no need to be careful and think it over. I mean, it's like every fucking episode. It was like this is the first draft. There's been no finessing at all.
I just honestly believe that Doctor Who will die in 2025. Of course, you've got the war between the land and the sea spin-off that might push it into 2026. But there's no way this is getting a third season. Two seasons were cleared. You've had RTD playing chicken with the BBC and with Disney in regards to the possibility of a third season. Even if a third season was greenlit today, it would take at least a few years for it to fully be done, because the first and second seasons of Disney Who were made over the process of the last few years. So there is a time frame involved. But I think if it does get a third season, it would be confirmed after the second season, which would be sometime in 2025. Then you add at least 2 years for production and pre-production, production and post-production. Then in that hypothetical, which I think it has a solid basis, you wouldn't get the third season of Disney Who until 2027. And after that, no, they're not getting another one. Because if they get a season four, 2029, maybe 2030.
This is insane. Mm. You know, in the old days, they used to pump out episodes, I think, in a few months. Yep. I'm pretty sure that I did find this out with Ghostlight from 1989, that I think it was filmed and then it was broadcast about 3 months after it had been filmed, or 2 months after, something like that. So it was much, much faster. And this is the thing, I went through this in the essays, that they had more, with this iteration, they've had a massively bigger budget. They've had more time for writing, more time for script development, the premise and all that, the casting the characters, all of that. They've had more time for production. They've had more time for post-production and a huge advertising budget as well. And yet they've managed tiny numbers, tiny viewing numbers, because for whatever reason, the thing is just shit. Absolutely fucking shit. In spite of everything that's gone into it, it's quite remarkable. It really is. I mean, and this is what drove me to write seven essays about it, because I wanted to analyze how do you fuck up this badly? Like, it's something that's worth analysis, because it's just, I've never seen anything like it. And as it happens, I was in a position to write about it because I did know about it, even though I haven't watched the show for... I've never watched it really. I watched the first two seasons back in 2005 and 2006, and thereafter I've just watched the odd episode. But I kept abreast of it. So I was in a position to write about it, so there I did. But to get back to the present day...
Sure.
The deal was... And the deal was two seasons or a certain number of episodes. No one knows exactly how much, no one knows even approximately how much money Disney pumped into this. But the rumor was $100 million. I think it was dollars. Mm-hmm. So that means roughly, and I worked this out, that each episode, assuming equal share, each episode probably had a budget of at least £4 million, rather. I just don't know what, I don't know what they've done with this money, but it is there. It's in that, it has to be in that region. It might be more like, it might be 5 million. I don't know, but it's a huge increase either way. But the point is, as you say, it took them 2 years to make this. They're going to have to wait until it's played out before Disney say yay or nay, then it'll be another 2 years. So,
three companies have to greenlight this: Disney, the BBC, and Sony. It's hard enough to get one company to sign off on something. Never mind two of the biggest companies, pop culture companies, in Disney for America and the BBC for the UK, plus Sony, which is a giant in its own right and in a variety of domains. This project had all the backing a creator could dream of, and it was so mishandled and mismanaged. That's why I think RTD, he must have syphilis or something. Who could mismanage this? Seriously, it's like if George Washington lived to see the War of 1812 and just completely failed in beating the British Canadians. That's how insane a comparison that would be.
Yeah. You see, it's not just that he had the backing and the money, the resources. He also had the talent and he had the experience because he's done this before. He's overseen it in the 2000s. So it really wasn't an amazing... I expected it to be woke. What I didn't expect was that it would be fucking dreadful writing in every way. Like, even just the decision to skip 6 months after Ruby, after the assistant, she joins the doctor, and then it just jumps ahead 6 months. So you don't see her getting used to being a time traveler. Mm. What the fuck kind of decision is that? It's absolutely awful. Then you've got the characterization of the doctor as this gay, this really annoying gay black twink who's calling his assistant babes, just talking to her like a big gay guy. I mean, I just don't know what they were thinking.
And even that doesn't make sense, because if you are a gay brown doctor pining for peen, why don't you have a male companion?
Well, presumably she's supposed to be his fag hag. I don't know. I really don't know. The thinking is just bizarre to me. But either way, even if, I mean, whatever they did, like, it could have been written better. That's the thing. Whatever choices they'd made, it could have been done well. But instead, it was done abominably, as I say, in every way. But the thing is, the thing that's interesting about this is, well, if you're interested in this at all, is where it's going to go. Because I don't think, as you say, I agree with you. I don't think I think Disney did this, and it's actually really sick. I think they did this in order to get Bluey, which is a program that they actually wanted. Mm-hmm. But the deal was, well, okay, we can get Bluey, which is massively lucrative. We can get that if we fund Doctor Who, if we acquire Doctor Who as well. I suspect that's what happened here. They didn't actually have any interest in it. But, you know, they did it, and now they've got Bluey. That might be it. I don't know. The other reason why they would want Doctor Who, even when it was in the doldrums, I mean, is prestige. Because, like, it's one more franchise that they can acquire, conquer, and wreck. And some people have said that it's... there was even a theory that they've encouraged Russell T. Davis to go down this road so as to destroy the program, so that they can then buy it, like, permanently from the BBC for a knockdown price. I mean, that's a very interesting... I didn't mention that in the essays, but I thought interesting theory.
Disney's part in this unholy alliance is international distribution rights outside of the United Kingdom. Sony's part in the alliance was actually making the product through Bad Wolf, and the BBC's part in the alliance was licensing, for lack of a better term, and having domestic UK rights to what I call Disney Who. So they all take a piece of the pie, but there's nothing there. There's no pie. So yes. What do I think will happen? I think the franchise will simply die. I think it'll die by 2025, and the BBC is that kind of company, where they can just put something on the shelf forever, if need be. Doctor Who, in a sense, was quite lucky to be taken off the shelf after a long period, at least 16, a generation.
It was 16 years. If you don't count the McGann movie, which probably shouldn't,
a BBC Fox initiative. Considering Fox is now practically owned by Disney, a precursor of what was to come, and failure leads to failure in that sense. But I think the BBC will simply put it on the shelf, because the BBC and Disney to another extent, but the BBC especially, doesn't need to be financially based in order to survive, because it has the license fee that keeps it alive. And in a sense, they are not financially based. They never have been. They never have been. And they never will be, because without the license fee, they'll die. I predict that as soon as it ceases to be. With Disney, they have so much fun, so much resources. They have, I think it was a quarter of $1 trillion in terms of value, like solid infrastructure value. They could lose $1 billion a year and still be in business in 250 years. So they don't need to be financially based. They can just do whatever they want. And that's why you see all sorts of crazy projects coming out of both those companies. So of the many companies that will fall to the woke mind virus, the last two will be Disney and the BBC, in my view.
Well, in that case, Doctor Who could continue for a long time. Mm. I mean, God forbid. You know, I mean, I like the idea. I mean, again, it's a kid's sci-fi show, right? Mm-hmm. I want to make clear that I am aware of that. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I do have some nostalgic fondness for it. And I do quite like the idea of it being put on the shelf now and being brought back 10, 15 years from now, when a completely different generation of writers would be in charge of it, right? Writers, producers. So Russell T. Davis would be maybe in a care home by then, maybe being looked after by Daleks or something.
Well, the craziest thing about it, though, is that because the nature of entertainment is been changing a lot recently, and I think it's going to change even more, that type of show, that type of entertainment through that type of medium could easily go the way of the dinosaur in 10 to 15 years. In fact, you can see it. I think on Disney Plus, well, Disney...
What do you mean by that kind of show?
Well, in terms of mainstream entertainment, in terms of how it's done, firstly through television, now through streaming services... And on Disney Plus, internationally, Disney, who only got a few hundred thousand people watching an episode. So when you've got the comparison with fine folks and fellow creators, especially the most prominent of them, getting tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people watching them in terms of viewership per show, maybe not live, mostly on the replays, that goes to show how much things have shifted. And that's going to continue to shift to the point where the kind of entertainment on television and even on streaming services will go the way of the dinosaur, in a sense, as more and more great people, whether they're active viewers or creators, create their own entertainment, which collectively resonates with more people. It's not just going to happen with Disney Who. I think it's going to happen with every single form of mainstream media entertainment, be it television or streaming. Streaming is a bubble. It's going to burst eventually. That's why you have so many shows that get a few seasons and then you never see them again, because the very nature of entertainment is changing, and very quickly too. And I think that's a good thing, personally. I would, because I'm a content creator. But it's a 20th century form of entertainment. It's had its time. It's had a good run, new century, new ways of entertaining people. And this is one way, through discourse, discussion. But there are other creators who create great projects. One example would be NeuralVids, or is it Vids? Yeah, it's NeuralVids. I recently discovered the channel. It's a crazy entertainment channel, creating an original story set in the monoverse. And... It uses AI-based content creation, but it gets a lot of support. Tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people watching videos, about 5 to 10 minutes long, and people find it funny. People find it entertaining. Costs are minimal. And if it's got a few ads here and there, it could make lots of money. So that, to me, is the future. Disney Who is the past, living on borrowed time.
See, that's the thing. It's interesting because... In several different ways, it feels like what they're doing here with this program and similar ones is antiquated. When it came back in 2005, well, the classic program, each story would be between 3 and 7 episodes long. When they brought back the revival, it was each story was one episode long. It was like one 50-minute thing, one story. And that was it. And it was more fast-paced and all that. And there was less filler, but also less getting to know the characters and the situation, like less dialogue. which, you know, some people prefer that. I don't. I like setting and scene and characters. Call me old-fashioned. But anyway, so that was then. That was 2005, and it was really popular then to have these fast-paced, one-off things. Then Game of Thrones came along. I mean, there were others before that, Dexter, mm-hmm. The Sopranos, whatever. But Game of Thrones, I think, was the thing that really changed this, where people started to prefer long-running arcs. So it'd be like 10 episodes, and that would be a thing. That season would tell its own story, this kind of thing. And Doctor Who kind of tried that with at the end of Chibnall's era with the Flux season. But I think that was kind of by necessity. But anyway, so now they're going back. They're doing this thing now, which one-off stories in 50 minutes. What they were doing in 2005, 20 years ago. And I don't think it works. So there's that. Mm-hmm. But then the other way in which this seems antiquated is just the whole, as you say, the whole infrastructure by which it's created, where you've got a powerhouse studio funding body, and then the huge amounts of resources go into it. Something that could be done quite easily with CGI or models or whatever is instead a huge set. huge numbers of extras when it could easily, again, it could be done digitally very easily. So everything has to be done the old, what is now the old fashioned way. At a point when AI and other types of digital creation seem poised to replace all of that, and could already be replacing all of that. Mm. I mean, why do you need to have some huge like green screen thing like they used for the Boom episode, where they've got, I don't know if you saw the behind the scenes things there.
Oh,
they've
yeah.
got this thing called, is it the Vault? Something like that, where it's literally an immersive like circular screen.
I've seen independent filmmakers use similar infrastructure for creator Kickstarter campaigns. I mean, the Boom is actually a great example of an existing institution using a new form of media. That's why it was a bottle episode. That's why it was a cheap episode. And ironically, it was the most well-received episode. So there you go on that front.
It's the only one that I've got any desire to watch. Mm. Because I like bottle episodes. I like it when there is a paucity of resources. So they have to make, the script has to work. And the characters have to work. The writing has to work. The acting has to work. That's what I'm into. To me, that's what drama should be about. And the simplicity of basically one set for the whole episode. I like that. It appeals to me. But what I was going to say was, nowadays, like AI is getting to the point where it could just extract an actor from a scene, a shot, and place them into a different thing. You don't, I mean, it just feels like at this point, there really shouldn't be any need for large sets at all. There even shouldn't be any need for green screen stuff anymore, because the technology is clever enough to take care of this stuff. And I think that's how it's going to be. In a few years, and I wrote some essays, which I didn't publish this year. I haven't finished them yet. But I wrote some essays about the possibilities of AI media creation. I went into it all there. I can imagine someone, like someone in the old cliche, someone in their bedroom, someone in their attic, someone in their mother's basement, these things, creating something that looks like it was created by Hollywood. And the thing is that Hollywood then, and the BBC and Disney and so on, will have nothing. They won't be able to rival it because they've got nothing to say. Whereas an individual with no financial demands on them and political demands on them will be able to speak freely and give a whatever his honest perspective on relationships or whatever it is. Whereas, yeah, the way we've been doing this, it has enabled great things to be created, but it's also been incredibly stultifying, especially over the last 10 years.
Mm. And within pop culture content creation, there have been plenty of attempts of people creating their own projects, their own intellectual properties. A great example, and I dare say the most successful one, would be Eric July's Ribiverse project, which is his own comic book franchise mean, the irony that the most successful independent creator-based corporation among pop culture creator spaces came from a black man. I know it's very ironic, ladies and gentlemen, but he's been doing this for a very long time. He's gained a lot of support, and now he's pursuing his project, turned it into a corporation, and it's now a multi-million dollar corporation. Some people love it. Some people can't bloody stand it. The content creator who was well known for rapping and talking about libertarianism, now being a comic creator with his own team. But yeah, it is quite a controversial topic, but it's a great example of, and it did take a process of 15 years, of a content creator going from nowhere over time, creating a multi-million dollar creator-based corporation. And it's called the Ripperverse after himself, Young Ripper, Eric July. So that's being done even without AI-based technology. He's the most successful example, but there are plenty of other examples of fine folks and fellow creators creating their own projects. Some of them do well in terms of thousands in revenue. Others, tens of thousands, a few in the hundreds of thousands. Very few in the millions. That's why I use the Ripperverse as an example of that. But this is even being done without AI-based content creation. And for me, I mean, this is going to be a terrifying perspective, especially for those who are financially based, is that with this technology, entertainment as a whole and media will be in such a state where anyone could do it. Anyone with technology and an internet connection, you know, like a gaming laptop. And that will get to a point where it doesn't become financially viable as a business. And I think that's the great double-edged sword of technology, is that with every innovation, it makes a financially based world less and less possible, which is terrifying because we don't really know how to run our society without being financially based. The closest we came to doing that was, well, mass murdering communists, for lack of a better term. So this technology presents a lot of opportunities. It also presents a lot of dangers. And a few of those dangers would be things you wouldn't really think about. Like, they're not going to kick your door down like battle droids and shoot you dead. They're just going to make it impossible for you to have a career in anything.
Well,
so there you go.
Yeah, this is where I would see the problem being is in distribution. Mm-hmm. This one thing to create a film. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone can create a film right now with a phone or whatever. It's the difficulty isn't getting anyone to see the film, to see the drama, to see the episode, whatever it is. That is where I think infrastructure, industry, and money, big money, will still be relevant, will still play a part. And, you know, that's probably bad mostly, unless sane people can take over those positions. Mm. That's the thing. The actual creation, because, well, then you could say you could rely on the algorithm, but then YouTube is very biased, as I can attest, and many others can. So that's where I could see it being a problem still, where Disney might not need to spend $200 million to make a film anymore, but by spending $50 million on advertising, they can ensure that their shit gets seen, where everyone else's stuff, which is much better made, much more sincere and so on, it just falls by the wayside. That's going to remain a problem, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I stand by the mindset of authenticity is the currency of the 21st century. And your perspective, your way of talking about things or doing things will resonate with people. Of course, the cream of the crop rises to the top. And hang together, don't hang separately. These kinds of sayings, which I use to make up for the fact that I usually suffer bloopers, you know, little errors in my statements. Thankfully, that hasn't happened here, which is fantastic. Don't want a bloopering moron as as a special guest now, do you?
Bloopers, look, things, mistakes happen in every live stream. Mm-hmm. I've probably done a few things wrong. I don't know. But it's just par for the course. So you can't afford to care too much about it. Otherwise, you'd never do anything.
But one-to-one shows are always the best. If you've got a panel of nine, which is most of the time on Hypnotic Saturday Night Hypnosis, I try my best to tango with the best of them, but I rarely live up to expectations.
A panel of nine, my God. I think any more than four people you can do it, but any more than that, that's asking for trouble.
I structure shows, not on StreamYard, because you can't really do it, but on a site called EvMew. I think I've had panels of about 10, 11. But we have one big person on the left and everyone else small on the right, and that creates the structure necessary for people to speak their minds on a topic. Then we go through the panel, and then I timestamp everything because I'm going to turn it into a damn video anyway, and people enjoy that. And I think structure is very important for shows, and also organization between creators is something that we, as fine folks and fellow creators, have to develop upon, because we can only do so much on our own. So that's what I try to do. I try to analyze creators, understand their strengths, understand their weaknesses, and find the best place for those people, especially if they're within reality-based. I think I have 26 regular creators that I've gone through over the course of the last 18 months. Was 27, but one of the fine folks and fellow creators, Dobby Hunter Rev Ravenwolf, died a few months ago. Died of terminal cancer in his early 20s. He was a great guy too. Sad that he's no longer with us.
Yeah, it's very sad. I interacted with him when I appeared on Will of the Fans. He was there, and it's a damn shame. Damn shame. So yeah, I didn't know that until we just before we went on air that the Rev had died. So it's a shame. Someone said you can't. So we were talking about a few minutes ago when we were talking about the algorithm and big money. So those are the two sort of forces there. And someone mentioned, what about critics? What about critic power? So this is in terms of getting a good quality thing to reach the audience it deserves. Critics could have an influence there. Yes, they could. But again, that's the critics that we currently have are tied to the old infrastructure. So they'll write a review for The Guardian, having gone to see the thing at the cinema, etc. And they'll be talking about it to an audience who are expecting to get it on DVD or to see it on TV, whatever. But yeah, critics can still they can adapt and talk about this, a new ecosystem, of course. The problem there, again, is they can be bought. And you'll know as well as I do about Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, what an absolute shit show.
Yeah, literally bought and paid for. I think the parallel problems between, say, the political realm and the pop culture realm, as well as the cultural realm, we all share very similar problems, which means there are similar solutions to said problems. And it's all about the process. Highlight the problem, find solutions, be the change you want to see, and keep on going, keep on growing, that sort of thing. Think of the opposition as dinosaurs. I mean, you look at the Labour Party, the Conservative Party, they're centuries-old institutions. They didn't even work properly in the 20th century, never mind the 21st. And think of yourselves as the media, both individually and collectively. Reform's the foot in the door, then they fail, then people become more radical, then something new, fresh, vibrant, and exciting takes over in the 2030s, around that period. And hopefully there'll still be people like us as a majority by then. But it's funny how after a few generations, the foreigners stop breeding. It's almost as if Western culture incentivizes people to stop having children.
Yes, it is a very strange thing. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other topic. But
I know.
I certainly agree. All right, there was a super chat. Let me just see. Oh, yes, someone's saying, happy millennial. Thanks for all you do. Woz and Ryan. So
thank you
very much, Sentient Potato. That's great. All right. Well, Ryan, this has been a very interesting conversation for me. I hope that it wasn't too alienating for those people who aren't interested in science fiction or Doctor Who specifically. I did think that we were going to talk a bit more about Star Trek and Star Wars, but there isn't really much to say except they're more diluted versions of what's happened with Doctor Who, where it's just this mind-boggling descent in every metric. What we've said about Doctor Who could be applied to these other franchises and even to Indiana Jones and many others, more than you could name. So, all right, this has been an interesting conversation. So I hope you've enjoyed it. Hope the people at home have enjoyed it. All right. Ryan, any last things before we finish?
Well, I'll just say my conclusion. Thank you all very much for watching. If you haven't already, whatever platform you're watching this on, like, share, follow, subscribe, whatever the platform says. And, check out more of what Millennial Woz has to offer, especially in regards to Millennial. As for me, you can check me out over at Ryan Roger Athey on YouTube, on Twitter/X, as well as on Odyssey and Rumble. I'm on a few sites. All you have to do is just type. No one else has this name. Barely any Americans can pronounce this part of my name, so I don't think there's anyone quite like me. And everyone is welcome on this. I always like saying this. Everyone is welcome on Reality Based, no matter how black, female, crippled, or Jewish you are. Everyone is welcome.
All right. There was something I wanted to pick up on. Someone said, I remember a guest on Millennial last year who made a movie review indexing website, which flagged woke content. Do you know how his project is going? Sounds very much like what we need. I agree, it is very much what we need. It was called Zeitgeist Reviews, and as far as I know, it is still going. I might ask him on again next year to talk about it, to talk about the project, how it's going. Let's see. I don't know. I've just Googled and I can't find it. But I
know in regards to gaming, there's a website called Sweet Baby Ink Detected. I think it's now called DEI Detected in regards to gaming, detecting all the games that are potentially, you know, full of the woke mind virus. And I think over the past year, in what was called Gamergate 2, certainly hasn't lived up to the name, if you ask me. But it has highlighted the problem and the rot in the gaming industry. And fingers crossed, by the end of next year, Kotaku will cease to exist as a brand. they're down to 4 employees now, and Mercante was recently sacked from the organization.
I see. It's nice to see these people getting their just desserts. That's for sure. I'm just looking for right. Okay, it's zgreviews.com. And let me just have a look at it and see if it is still there. I bloody well hope it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is, and it seems to be quite buzzing. Seems to be very good. Okay, good. So zgreviews.com, that's where to go. Mm-hmm. So yes, thank you for reminding me of that. It is indeed relevant to what we've been discussing. Okay, well, I'll be back in about 35 minutes with John Carter. But in the meantime, Ryan Roger Athey, thank you for appearing on Millennial X.
Thank you for having me on, and hopefully I'll be back next year. You never know, though. Maybe sharper minds will be on instead. But keep my fingers crossed.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye for now.
On this anniversary year, a true bounty can be found in the merchandise store. T-shirts, mugs, and an incredible range of posters. all exclusive products, everyone the perfect way to remember this unique time. At the end of the festival, a very special poster will be available, but no need to wait for that. See what you can pick up today.